Hey, welcome back. A cave that held Dead Sea Scrolls before they were stolen in the mid-20th century has been discovered near Qumran. Inside the cave, archaeologists found a blank scroll along with the remains of jars, cloth, and a leather strap. The researchers say they believe these items were used to bind, wrap, and hold the scrolls. Archaeologists taking part in the excavation said they could tell from modern-day pickaxes found in the cave that the newly discovered cave had been robbed. Thus, any scrolls that may have been that may have held writing were taken, the researchers said. The scientists added they think the blank scroll found in the cave was in ancient times being prepared for writing. Although at the end of the day, no scroll was found, and instead we've only found a piece of parchment rolled up in a jug that was being processed for writing. The findings indicate beyond any doubt the cave contained scrolls that were stolen, said excavation director Oren Gutfeld, an archaeologist at the Hebrew University's Institute of Archaeology. You can read more about that at the in the news section at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasore, has posted that. Hey, would you like to enjoy a grand experience with George Norrie live? Well, you can when radio comes to the stage on May the 6th from 5 to 8 p.m. A Danheiser Wagner Entertainment production brings you George's first live stage show of the year at the Plaza del Sol Performance Hall on the campus of California State University Northridge in Northridge, California. Guests include hypnotherapist and past life regression expert Dr. Bruce Goldberg, afterlife expert and near-death experiencer Danyon Brinkley, author and contactee Whitley Strieber, and there'll be a meet and greet following the show. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 1-800-745-3000, 800-745-3000. Your questions and comments for Lon Strickler as we discuss canines, mutant canines, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto, Canada. Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Lon Strickler is with us, and his latest in a series of Phantoms and Monsters books is titled Phantoms and Monsters Unexplained Encounters. We're talking about bipedal canine cryptids, sometimes referred to as Dogman. Let's go right into the phone calls on the wild card line. Toby is checking in from Daytona Beach, Florida. Toby, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Hey, great show. What a wonderful addition to the staff and the personality you are to the Coast to Coast family. It's just an incredible amount of talent that you guys have from the production side. You guys have reached a new level of smooth with the transitions, the bumper music selection, how you're handling call-ins, and it's just incredible what you guys are doing with production. I've listened for over a decade, and the show is in as best form as I've ever heard it. You have so much going for your production staff.
But thank you very much, Toby. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Bear dog. Have you heard of a bear dog?
Is that like a dire wolf?
No, it's a no. A bear dog is an extinct. It's an extinct phylum of mammals, but it's more related to the Ursidae than the Canidae. But both dogs and bears are part of the caniformia classification of animals. So I remember the thing with the dogs that they thought were chupacabra. They just had this weird type of mange where their skin had hardened over. And they had actually no hair left. But I was wondering if a similar thing could be going on, because you're talking about something 7 foot, looks like a dog, but it's bipedal, and whether or not that's related to an extinct species of bear or the bear dog, which we used to think, but that goes way back. To have one of those still alive now would be very strange. Not that it hasn't happened before, coelacanth. But,
well, Toby, your use of Latin and the word phylum indicates to me you are an important resource. So thank you for checking in. Let's put that question over to Lon. Could this be a bear dog?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's possible. The original sighting we had kind of looked like, you know, from the description, it may possibly be something like a bear. But I don't know. You know, I can't really give you a definitive answer on that.
My next sort of prosaic explanation for this is it's some sort of adaptation. To be able to walk on hind two legs. Is it possible that a wolf or some sort of a canine animal has over the years simply adapted?
I don't know. You know, the coy wolf population is starting to increase in Pennsylvania, and that's a crossbreed between coyotes and a gray wolf or a domesticated dog. Your area up in Toronto has had some problems with coy wolves for several years now.
Yes, and, yes. We grow our coyotes big up here.
Yeah, and there have been some moving into Pennsylvania. And we have been looking into that this may be some adaptation connected with the coy wolf. But so far, we don't have any connection to that.
All right, let's check in on the east of the Rockies line. John is in Lima, Ohio. John, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
All right, how are you both?
Great, thank you.
You want to know where the physical evidence lies at with this creature? And I was trying to figure out how to approach this, but I'm a security officer, and I put foot powder in my socks before I come to work. But if you don't think that at the end of the day there isn't DNA in those socks when I go home, the physical evidence I would think would be just like, for example, the sighting of the one eating the deer. There has to be, if there's a physical presence there, there's DNA there.
Exactly. Yes. Where you have puncture marks, you're going to have saliva and so forth.
Saliva.
Great point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's my main point.
The only problem with that is that if, you know, say you do have a roadkill and something eating roadkill. Well, if we don't get a report for a year later, then it's pretty impossible to get any type of DNA off of the animal. This would require something being collected very close to the sighting or the encounter. And unfortunately, so far, that has not happened.
Thanks for the call. Are any of these reports, are they reported to the sheriff's department or the local authorities at all? Or are these people so sort of rattled and maybe even a little embarrassed that they're not interested in reporting it to officials?
Well, we haven't come across anybody that's made a report to the game commission or to the local authorities. This recent sighting of this quadruped near Tuscarora State Forest, that gentleman did ask one of the people at Tuscarora, and they couldn't give him any type of answer. They kind of pushed him away. they really didn't give him an answer.
Have you talked to game officials? I mean, are they willing to talk about it?
I talked to somebody about a year ago at Caledonia State Park, which is within the Misho State Forest, and I talked to one of the officials there, and he kind of acted like he didn't know what I was talking about. And if he's had reports as well, and he said he's never heard anything like that.
And as you say, these reports go back about a century, correct? I mean, what are the earliest written documented cases that we have?
Well, there were some cases back in the mid-1800s. There was an habituation area near Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, in that area where a couple miners had said that they were attacked by several of these upright canines. for many years, even though this was in, I'm talking about Maryland, the Dwayo sightings are the upright canine sightings in central Maryland along the Catoctin Mountains down into Frederick, Maryland. There were at least 7 sightings in that area between the late 1800s and the 1960s. Pennsylvania had a few sightings that have been documented. There was an avituation group as well, noted in the 1990s in the Allegheny National Forest. And that was supposedly several dogmen in that area. And as well, in the early 1800s, just east of State College, Pennsylvania, several loggers reported that they were attacked by a group of these dogmen.
What kind of injuries did they sustain? I can only imagine.
Yeah, we don't have a record of that.
But think about that. Something between 7 and 10 feet tall, with the physique of Arnold Schwarzenegger, with claws, canine teeth. Think about what that could do to a human being.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's fortunately, we haven't had any attacks or anybody being hurt by one of these creatures. But, so far, people have kind of stayed away from them, if possible.
All right, the wild card line, Davis is right here in Toronto. Davis, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you guys doing today?
Top drawer, thank you.
So, like I was speaking to the person before getting on the phone call, so about 2 years ago, me and my fiance were heading to my parents' cottage in a little town called Brighton. So it's about 150 kilometers east of Oshawa, Ontario. So I've been building this 95.5-liter Mustang since I was 19. And I pulled off, me and my fiance at the time, pulled off at the Brighton exit, and we made a left. We probably were driving around for about 10 minutes, and something on my left peripheral of my eye, something was traveling along the side of the road in the forest while we were doing around 60 kilometers. And I asked my fiance, are you seeing what I'm seeing right now, that something is moving as fast as we're moving in my vehicle? So me, the line of work that I'm in, I work corrections, provincial corrections, so a lot of things don't really get to me. So I had my 5 double D diesel flash on my car. Me being the tough guy I was, I pulled my Mustang over to the side of the road. Keep in mind that it was around 1 o'clock in the morning, because I finished a shift and we're going after right after work. No lights, no nothing. And then this thing, when I stopped my vehicle, it stopped too. And I walked out of my vehicle. My wife's telling me, my fiance's telling me to get out, get back in the vehicle. And no more than around 20 feet away from me was something standing there. Going back to that canine conversation you guys are talking about, the skinless canine, but this canine it almost looked like a werewolf to me. And my fiance, she's Native, and she was saying that whatever that thing we were looking at, it looked right at me, I looked right at him, and I couldn't, or at it, I don't know if it was a him or not, I didn't get to see his genitals, but we looked at each other, and I just got this faint feeling something's wrong, and it looked at me, and it let off this noise, and then it ran back into the forest. So I jumped back in my Mustang, boogied to my parents' cottage, and told my dad and my mother everything that's happening. And then my fiance was talking about, she's Native, and she was talking about these people called skinwalkers that sometimes take form during the night because they're cursed, their bloodline has been cursed, and during the day they come back. And that's just a little story I had. It's been a cottage conversation ever since, and we've always looked to the side of the roads in the dark when we're driving there, and we haven't seen it since.
And you say it was upright on its hind legs, walking upright, and it had canine features. It had a snout. It had pointy ears.
Exactly. And the thing is, I had my 110-pound Rottweiler in the back. Her name is Mia, and she didn't even give out a yelp. She just looked in the general direction, and everyone in the car was just in awe when I got out, and I was actually very afraid. And I deal with inmates all day who've done heinous crimes, and I couldn't believe my eyes what I saw. And then even the guys I worked they thought I was hallucinating, but to this day, I can swear that this thing was there.
Davis, great call. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Have a good night, guys. Thank you.
Well, there you go, Lon. That sighting just east of Oshawa, which is just east of where I'm sitting, down the 401. So,
that doesn't surprise me quite, actually. I've, other than, as well, we've had other type of cryptid sightings, but the upright canine sightings, even those that I have not received and that are somewhat documented, run anywhere in like a triangle from St. Catharines up to Barrie, down over to Belleville and across, and that part of southern Ontario.
I really hesitate to throw this out there, but are you at least willing to consider that we're talking about lycanthropy? Are we gonna, can we use the W word here? Is that a possibility?
I'm open for anything, to be honest with you. It very well could be. That's another situation I've looked into. I know several people that believe it's lycanthropy. But at this point right now, we just can't really prove that.
You can't rule it out.
But you can't rule it out.
I was really hoping you were just going to shut that down, you know. I was just going to say there's absolutely no possibility. Could you not at least give me that, Lon? Let's see. I think we can.
I tell you, what I do, I don't discount anything anymore.
Let's see if we can squeeze Steve in here from Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the wild card line. Steve, good morning, good evening.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, I was going to tell you about some sightings in Oklahoma, but maybe I should just start out with. I think the best three candidates for this thing would probably be the Amphisaion, which your first caller mentioned as a werewolf. They supposedly died out 14 million years ago. But it's funny, the Native Americans have reported them in northern Canada, or northern Michigan and southern Canada, recently as the last 150 years. They call them the Wahilas. So they know about them. They think they're made. Lauren Coleman has talked about them. There's another one called Borophagus. He's probably more closely. The Amphisaion was like a grizzly-sized bear with a head of a wolf. You know, a long snout, where a bear has a short snout.
Right, and, right. Well, that certainly fits the description.
Yeah, and then there's the dire wolf, which supposedly died out 9,000 years ago. So there could be small pockets of these things left around. Now what I've seen on most eyewitness reports is this thing looks, you know how most canine dogs, their front shoulders are kind of made into their body. They don't have
right.
a separate shoulder.
Right, no defined shoulder, right.
No defined shoulder, but a man has a defined shoulder on his upper shoulders.
Exactly.
And that's what this thing looks like, and that is the main difference that I see. And, of course, it still has the canine legs, but this thing has like an upper muscular body of a bodybuilder. Is what
that's
most
the part that's reporting. Most disturbing to me, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, but so far it seems to mostly just chase people. You can read Linda Godfrey's book. She has a lot of reports on it.
Mr. Bray Road, we've got to cut out here, Steve. Thanks for checking in from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I appreciate it. I'm really hoping this is just a bear wolf. Please let it be a bear wolf. Here's Elton John, Take Me to the Pilot. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. Hey, I love the Archies and Andy Kim as much as the next fella. But that song, Sugar Sugar, now belongs to Tina Turner. It's hers. End of story. Full stop. Hey, when it comes to seeking out signs of extraterrestrial life within our own solar system, no target has proven more tantalizing than Jupiter's moon Europa, a world thought to be home to a potentially habitable ocean of liquid water hidden deep beneath a thick, icy exterior shell. A thick, icy exterior shell. That's how I used to describe my former program director. Anyway, I digress. Now NASA has revealed new details of its plans to visit this enigmatic world in the future. The primary goal is to search for evidence of life on Europa, the space agency wrote. The other goals are to assess the habitability of Europa by directly analyzing material from the surface and to characterize the surface and subsurface to support future robotic exploration of Europa and its ocean. One of the ways in which NASA is looking to accomplish these objectives is by sending a lander to Europa that can take a much closer look at its surface and find out for certain whether or not there really is a subterranean ocean beneath the ice. You can read more about that in the news section where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasore, has posted that and other great stories. How would you like to break bread with George Norrie? Eat and Greet, the luncheon series at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks, California. I hear they do a wonderful moussaka. Have fun at lunch and meet some of your favorite people in the world of the unknown and curious. Enjoy gathering with other like-minded people. Tickets will go fast, so reserve a spot now. Email your name and phone number to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com, and then you'll be called back with details. So here's the lineup. Tuesday, February 28th, lunch with George and producer Tom. Thursday, the 30th of March, lunch with George Norrie and psychic Joseph Jacobs. Wednesday, May 17th, lunch with George Norrie and the Beverly Hills matchmaker Marla Martinson. That's all part of the Eat and Greet luncheon series at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks, California. Let me give you that email again. Email your name and phone number to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com, and you'll be called back with details. All right, just a reminder, coming up at the top of the hour, John Hook, a hard-boiled TV news reporter, will be here to hopefully shed some new light on the 40-year-old unsolved murder case of Bob Crane. But before that, more of your questions and comments with Lon Strickler as we continue to discuss bipedal canine cryptids right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Lon Strickler, the publisher, author of Phantoms and Monsters blog, and the latest in his series of Phantoms and Monsters book series is titled Phantoms and Monsters Unexplained Encounters. It would seem reasonable, Lon, that there is overlap in the range of Sasquatch and the Dogman. I'm just trying to wonder, you know, what it would be like if those two creatures were to meet up. I mean, who do you think would win if that battle were to take place?
That's hard to tell, but I have been getting correspondence from investigators up near the in northern Minnesota near the Canadian line. Where, in fact, this habituation area on this gentleman's property holds both creatures. And apparently there have been some scuffles, but I don't really have any details on that. Though they do apparently butt heads once in a while. I haven't heard anything like that in Pennsylvania or any place else. But I imagine... it probably has happened at some point.
Well, I wouldn't want to be the one to have to break it up. All right, boys, that's enough. That's enough. To your respective corners. Wild card line once again, and it's Adam in Portland, Oregon. Adam, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great, thank you.
Thanks for keeping me company at night. I appreciate it.
Same to you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think this thing... it's the ancient Egyptian god Anubis teleporting back and forth and just coming and getting something to eat, leaving.
All right. Well, we've certainly seen that creature sort of depicted in Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
That's more of a jackal, though, isn't it? Is that not supposed to be a representation of a jackal?
It's an African golden wolf is what they call it.
Ah, all right.
Wouldn't that be a trip, though?
That would be indeed a trip. Thank you for checking in, Adam. I appreciate that. Mary Ann is in Buffalo, New York on the wild. A lot of people checking in on the wild card line. Mary Ann, welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was walking home one day, and it was daylight. It was the summer of 2010, and I'm walking in the sidewalk, and I'm walking along this creek, and I hear this splash, and I didn't see any people around, so I'm thinking it was a fish. I went over to see if I could see the fish that made the splash. Now I'm standing at the side of the creek by the fence, and I'm looking in the water, but something in my upper peripheral caught my eye, and I looked up, and there was this creature. My first thought was, I've seen a picture somewhere that had to do with God, and he was on like one of those little couch things that with the bars and people carry you, you know, like a king or something.
Right.
And the picture had these mixed animals, creatures, you know, like a head of one animal, a body of another, and the waist down another. That's what this creature reminded me of at first. And then I'm thinking, it's someone in a suit. But then I noticed the legs. It had the, from the waist down, it had the body of a camel. And from the waist to the neck, it had long hair. I'd say from the distance, I'm guesstimating probably 3 to 4 inches length. And then from the neck up, it was a dog. It had short, pointed little ears, and the very tops of the ears had the little tufts like a bobcat has. It had a little tiny nose, like I call it a button nose. It was, I can't think of the breed of the dog, but in real life, it's a small dog. But this thing... All right, I'm 5'5", and the fence, this thing was leaning on this fence very comfortably with his forearm, if you will, on top of the fence. Now, about 3 years ago, I went back to that same spot. This fence comes to my neck. So this thing, whatever it was extremely tall, and I felt very uneasy and scared at the same time, looking at this thing. I must have stood there a good minute and a half, just, you know, analyzing what it was, trying to figure out what it was. And a car came behind him. There was a side road. And all he did was turn his head around, looked at the car's direction, and then looked back at me. The whole time he was staring at me, other than that one moment he looked at that car. And I ended up getting too scared, and I left.
And it stayed there. It didn't move?
Well, when I left, I don't know what it did, but the whole time it was just standing there. It was just standing there looking at me, staring at me like I was staring at him.
Hmm. Well, they don't seem skittish at all, do they, Lon?
No, they don't. They seem to... you know, whatever this was, but what we're running into seemed to hold their ground.
Thank you for checking in from Buffalo, Mary Ann. Let's see. Let's go west of the Rockies. Alan is in Whidbey Island, Washington. Hi, Alan.
Richard and Lon, I'd like to suggest something that I haven't heard tonight, that these creatures are neither supernatural nor products of evolution, but as H.G. Wells wrote about in 1896 in The Island of Dr. Moreau, they may be hybrid creations of our black ops laboratories, possibly. And I'd like to get your opinion about that, and I'll take my answer offline. Thank you very much.
Alan, that's as good an explanation as I've heard. Why not? You know, we're putting human cells in pigs or pig cells in humans, and we've seen those black and white videos on YouTube of some of these ghastly experiments that took place in the Soviet Union in the 1950s, you know, trying to combine different animal species together and creating these monsters that didn't live very long. But why not? That's certainly a possibility, wouldn't you say, Lon?
I guess it is possible. I doubt that they would be able to breed because most hybrids are sterile, but it would have to be a fair number of them that had gotten away. because of all the sightings we're having in different, you know, in such, you know, large territories. Then again, I don't know how big a territory one of these creatures would inhabit. So I don't know. It is possible.
Does the hot zone for these sightings remain Bray Road in Wisconsin? I mean, are we continuing to get new sightings out of Bray Road?
Well, I've talked to Linda pretty regularly, and she has...
Linda Godfrey, right.
Yeah, she has had reports constantly, but as far as Bray Road, in the area of Bray Road, I don't think she has anything new there, but she has been investigating several other sightings.
All right, let's see. We'll go east of the Rockies this time. Jimmy is in Dayton, Ohio. Jimmy, hello. Jimmy, are you there? Jimmy in Dayton, Ohio. Richard,
yes.
In Pittsburgh. Richard,
hello.
Welcome. Hi there.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'd like to tell you about something that happened to me when I was about 10 years old. It was back in 1972. I live about 8 miles south of Pittsburgh and in a very tight valley with steep, forested, heavily forested sides. And I was in my backyard stargazing one night, must have been like August, and my yard is about 100 yards long, and it slopes down to a small stream, and there are these big hedges between them. And I was standing there, and I heard something coming down the stream, and was definitely walking on 2 feet, not 4 feet. And I thought it was just one of the kids in the neighborhood, and I started to walk towards the stream, and something growled at me. And it was a loud, very menacing growl. And I did what any 10-year-old, I ran for the hills. I ran up to my bedroom, and I grabbed my dad's big flashlight, and I out of my bedroom, which shone out of the backyard. And a little upstream, there was a little stream that comes down to the stream. And I showed my flashlight, and something was walking up that hill. And there were all these little trees, and it would grab and shake each tree as it went past. And the next day, I grabbed my friends, I told them what I saw, and we went up the stream a couple hundred yards, and we found one footprint. I'll never forget, ran and got my tape measure. It was 21 and a half inch long, 6.5 inches wide, and it had 6 toes.
Uh-huh.
Why I didn't report it to anybody at that time, I was just a kid. And we didn't have cameras in those days. But,
all right. Well, I won't even ask you if you made a plaster cast, because I know the answer is no. But, Drat, there we have physical evidence. Physical evidence, Lon.
Yeah. Yeah, that description does sound indicative of what people have been seeing. The very long, narrow foot. I don't know how many toes. Normally, I would think 3 to 4. But it does sound that it very well could have been a upright canine.
And it left a footprint, so that might suggest we are talking about a physical entity rather than some sort of a phantom, no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, to the wild card line yet again. Mark is in Wichita, Kansas. Mark, welcome.
Good evening to your guest, Lon. I've done a little research myself. I'm surprised that his name hasn't popped into the conversation yet tonight. David Politis.
Oh, yes.
A deep collection of...
Missing 411.
Yes, and... to cite something that David had touched on in one of his books, so this parallels Mr. Strickler exactly the type of investigation and physical evidence that was yielded from that. There's a case that happened in western Kentucky at a location near a national park called the Land Between the Lakes.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
And there was a lot of evidence. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough of it left to get questions from them because they were all killed. And the evidence suggested that there were wolf-like or at first when I read this, I thought it was some type of a fluke or just some type of a fantastic, but you know, the FOIA inquiries are not responded to favorably about this incident, and four people were literally eviscerated.
So, Mark, you're suggesting that these grisly killings may have been the handiwork of one of these bipedal canines?
No question in my mind. And the way that the remains were stayed suggested a barbarity beyond anything like any of our common canids. Canids don't leave remains in trees. They don't do that. They take what they... they're actually quite expedient. They don't just kill to be killing wolves. In fact, those that have been repatriated to are the northern sections in Montana, Wyoming, wonderfully pair with the animals, the herd animals that are up there. They don't pose threats to him and humans whatsoever, but I can guarantee you the waters run deep here. And there are, it's from my own personal inquiries and conversations that I've had with other people that have given me the reason to believe to be very careful about where you go, what you're looking for, and you might just find more than you're, if you don't know what you're doing. stay in the confines of the halls of research and books and photographs, and don't get out there in places where, frankly, I have, like, say, the depth of Mr. Politis's books speaks volumes. It did not, you know, reach too far into.
Indeed. Mark, on that most chilling note, I thank you for your call. Well, there you go, Lon. Sort of putting a finger on the culprit behind some of these multitude of missing persons in national parks, etc. It could be this bipedal canine creature. How do people find your blog, read your blog, Lon?
Well, you can find it at www.phantomsandmonsters.com. You can go in there, read it daily, or you can sign up for the newsletter, which comes in your email every morning. As well, you can go to Amazon and pick up my books. Just either put my name, Lon Strickler, in the search, or Phantoms and Monsters in the search, and they're sure to come up.
All right, my friend, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
Lon Strickler, Phantoms and Monsters. Here's Carla Thomas of Stax Records. Baby taking us into the break. John Hook, Who Killed Bob Crane, coming up next on Coast to Coast AM.